Good evening. This is Mae Brussel. The title of this one-hour broadcast is World Watchers. It is program number 801, April the 13th, 1987. I have two quick announcements before I proceed with the more formal part of the broadcast. Starting May the 4th, that's two Mondays from now, World Watchers will begin at 7 o'clock instead of 8. 7 to 9 instead of 8 to 10. The more formal part of the program, the news, will be for 1 hour, 7 to 8, the talk show part from 8 to 9. So make a note on your calendar so you don't miss that first hour of World Watchers. I don't want you to miss a single minute of it. March the 25th on Saturday, this is a week from Saturday, there will be various demonstrations and people protesting certain activities of our government, a lot of them particular activities. And this meeting has taken place in the last few years in San Francisco, New York, Los Angeles, and Washington. The Peace March group are going to assemble here in Monterey County. If you want to go, I'll give you the phone number, 372-8887, Nuclear Freeze Group. The bus fare is $20. It leaves at 8 in the morning on Saturday. It returns at 7 p.m. at night. I went up there last year. I'm going to do it again this year. Meet at the Greyhound bus station in Monterey. And if you want to go up for the day and be back by 7 in the evening, you can call the Nuclear Freeze Group in the Monterey Peninsula. For those of you who hear World Watchers up in the Bay Area, in Los Gatos, Los Altos, Cupertino, San Francisco, and so forth, many of you do go to this Peace March, and I do too, and hopefully we can find some place to meet in common and get together for a few hours next, a week from Saturday. On November 24th, 1986, I did a broadcast, not enough of it. I was going to continue, and then the news went on so quickly. It was about how the election was stolen in 1980 by Ronald Reagan, and the maneuvers called the October 22nd Movement, with the intent of keeping the hostages in Iran and sabotaging the rescue mission, which now we learned was arranged by General Secord and Oliver North and the people inside the White House National Security Council. And I was talking about the stealing of the election and the links of these contrigators to getting Ronald Reagan in office in the first place in 1980. A very good article on that subject was written by Fred Landis for Covert Action, April 1981, on the stealing of the election. And Don Free did an article for the first issue of Rebel, the one that I have the cover story, the Nazi connections to the Kennedy assassination. And of course, these people tap right into that. They're not separate from it, but I've made those connections other times and will be doing it in the future. Just this past week, as a matter of fact, yesterday, the night news service had in the San Jose Mercury and in the Miami Herald, and part was in the LA Times, the story that Iranians are talking about the fact that Ronald Reagan and his team coerced them to hold off the hostages. Of course, they wanted to do that anyway because they didn't want Jimmy Carter elected. And Reagan was making preparations to rearm Iran in exchange for holding up the release of the hostages until he was elected president. Now, that national stealing of the election is a scandal just breaking in the news services, and I'm sure that the Iran-Contragate investigations are going to have to tap into that. The group of people described by Fred Landis in his October 22nd Movement article include Center for Strategic International Studies and the Heritage Foundation. In the last 2 weeks, I've been talking about accuracy in media and Reed Irvine, and four members of the board of Heritage Foundation are also on the board of accuracy in media. Oh, pardon me. Just hit the mic a little bit. Hope it's okay for you. Midge Dechter is one of them. Honorable Shelby Cullum Davis is another. Honorable Claire Booth Luce is one. And Honorable William Simon. And also a large funder of AIM is Richard Mellon Scaife, who puts up the money or a big hunk of it for the Heritage Foundation. So the very people that were sabotaging the election by making sure that the hostages were tied up in Iran until Reagan was elected, a large section of these people are also, as I say, with Reed Irvine on accuracy in media, and I'll be doing more of that in a few moments. I've been running down for the past few weeks various very important fascists that are being rounded up, jailed, charged with crimes. I reviewed them for you last week, and I left off still another one. I mentioned Reverend Potter Gale, Juan Lopez Rega, Franklin Camper, Francesco Pazienza, Stefano Della Calle, Carlos Leder Rivas, and I forgot to say that Paul Marcinkus and two bankers from the Vatican Bank are wanted by the Italian authorities for promissory notes that were missing due to the Vatican's connection to Banco Ambrosiano. $1.2 billion were put in 10 dummy fronts in Panama. So Paul Marcinkus is wanted by the authorities in Italy, as well as two members of the Vatican Bank. So that makes seven major operations that connect to the P2, to the Aryan Nations, to the White House ContraGate team. Again, Francesco Pazienza, Michael Ledeen, and their connection to Licio Gelli. I won't run those down for you, but there's an interlocking link, interestingly enough, between these seven people who've been locked up, arrested, or wanted for arrest, such as Paul Marcinkus in the Vatican. The Washington Post had a story this morning that the White House widens its Iran investigation, that they're taking seriously the special prosecutors that are getting ready to call 191 witnesses, if you would believe it. They've listed 191 witnesses or organizations. Well, you can imagine if an organization is included there, try the P2, try the Nguyen Bank. How about the connections to Stanford Technology? And then you open a real ball of wax. But the important thing is that the investigation is going to proceed and that the powers that be have broadened their search, and the attorney for the President of the United States is broadening the material that he wants, I suppose, to defend the President of the United States. And interestingly enough, the Washington Post story today said that they want papers going back to the day that Ronald Reagan was elected president. Not 1985, 86, when the money went to Iran, where the weapons went to Iran, the money went to the Contras, when Congress said it couldn't be sent to the Contras for military purposes. The investigation, as of this moment, goes back to the start of Reagan's first term, according to the administration officials and documents. Now, if they would just go back to his first term as governor, they'd really be hitting some hard bases and go for Helene Von Thom and Stanford Technology and Theodore Shackley and Thomas Kleins and Albert Hakim out of TCI that became IIS, and Hakim took it over. And the good way for them to understand the whole process, which of course they're not going to do, but I'm very surprised today to see that the investigation is going to the day Reagan was sworn in as president. And of course, I mentioned before on World Watchers that the very first National Security Council meeting was about Iran, and it was about Libya. This is very important. The policies that he was to pursue for 6 years after the United States arms those countries, then the United States has an excuse with Israel to go to war against those countries, and the Defense Department, CIA, and National Security Council were very much a part of arming them in the first place. I mentioned last week on World Watchers that the United Nations files on Nazis are to remain closed. If I repeat something on this program, I do it for a specific purpose, and I'm aware that I do it, and I try to give you new information every week. But I promise you I will probably read this one article every week when World Watchers begins. And the one I'm citing now is from the New York Times, March 26, 1987. UN files on Nazis to remain closed. Former members of the United Nations War Crimes Commissions have rejected the Israeli request that the commission files on Nazi war criminals be open. The spokesman said that 16 of 17 nations that were members of the commission told the Secretary General, Xavier Swelar, that they opposed the Israeli request. The United States was among those opposing the request. Now, why is it important that we find out who the people were that whose names are on this list? 36,810 files. Now, we know one was Joseph Mengele. He was pretty important. The other was Adolf Eichmann. We know he was pretty important. And two or three names have been revealed, but who are the 36,806 other people? Three were mentioned, and I want to know about Fritz Kramer and Otto von Bolschwing. And the reason it's important, if I just run down for you 18 reasons right now, I think you'll get the idea. I'm going to cite 18 articles that have been in the news just the past week or week and a half to show you where we're going, because the real goal of these people was to wage a war against Russia. And this time, we are not going to only pay with our taxes and our debts, but with our lives. I want to quickly run down the kind of thing I'm reading in my newspapers every day ad nauseum, and it's terrible. One's from the New York Times, March 23rd, 1987. It talks about Secretary of the Navy John Lehman, who's ready to retire, and how Lehman has set up his plan to attack the Soviet Navy in the Arctic Ocean. I told you I heard him on Nightline 2 years ago telling how he would start World War III in the Arctic Ocean, detailing it on that program. But now it's printed up in the New York Times, and there's an article by Bernard Traynor, and then in large letters it says, some civilians are skeptical of the concept. They consider it suicidal. So if you are suicidal and don't know who those 36,000 other people are, or more than that, just keep the list locked up and let them proceed with what they want. Another article, April the 10th, 1987, John Lehman ends his tour of duty, full speed ahead. They gave him a 19-gun salute when he left the Navy. And Lehman, early in his career, according to this article, switched control of the Center for Naval Analysis from the University of Rochester to the Hudson Institute in 1983. Because he couldn't stand somebody getting Navy money and giving him answers he disagreed with. Now, Marge Dechter, on the board of Accuracy in Media, on the board of the Heritage Foundation, the mother-in-law of Elliot Abrams, sending money from various countries to fight the people in Nicaragua, she is one of the board members and officials of the foundation. And I could give you more, but the Hudson Institute is a close affiliate of Marge Dechter and Elliot Abrams' family. San Francisco Examiner, January 31st, several months ago. Expert says Star Wars could turn sniper. Like an orbital sniper, Reagan's proposed Star Wars system could use a laser beam to kill enemy leaders from space, a Bay Area arms expert and scientist said Friday. They talked about the ghoulish use of Star Wars, particularly destroying by laser beam from outer space a whole city or an individual person. Assassinations and destructions of cities are a far cry from the stated goal of SDI, but they could involve the use of lasers, particle beam weapons, and other gadgetry to provide a defense shield from attack missiles, but it also could be used for severe burns, burning towns, and as an example of a joke, the scientist for SDI said, it might be used to assassinate members of the Soviet Politburo attending the annual parade at Red Square. Now, that was the exact stated goal of Project Paperclip when known Nazi war criminals were brought to this country, and this is what they want to use. They stated it in 1945, and here it is in 1987 as part of the Star Wars project. San Francisco Chronicle, February 2nd, 1987, United States defense work going overseas. $9 billion in military contracts go to foreign companies. The $156 million to Rolls-Royce in Britain, $102 million to a company in Italy, more to a bomb factory in France. We're contracting our weapons overseas to be made in other countries, which might leave us a little vulnerable in case they can't get them to us on time. And also, it's an employment problem here if people want to manufacture them, and I think they should be diverting from that. Another article, February the 8th, 1987, Israel prepares for possible chemical weapons, and this has to do with Defense Minister Yitzhak Rabin saying that they are passing out or thinking about gas masks in Israel, and the civil defense program, while it was shelved for a while, may be brought back because millions of gas masks and other equipment stored underground will be used in case of a Syrian attack. I think nabbing the neutron bomb with Israel, the capability, they could be just as well involved in the chemical, biological neutron bomb attack, but they use the excuse of defense, like Ronald Reagan uses the defense, Star Wars, SDI, when we know it could be a first strike attack, so Israel is getting their millions of gas masks ready. Militarizing space, an article April the 8th, 1987, behind the media cause of the latest failure of policies in regarding the missiles and the rockets is that Reagan has been a virtual prisoner of the military-industrial complex, and his whole interest is paring down the expenses needed to take care of the exploratory use of space as they get ready for Star Wars. And, of course, I've cited this article before. It came out February 22nd, 1987. Preparing for World War IV, under the cloak of black budget secrecy, the U.S. is spending billions on nuclear bombers, millions to train dolphins as underwater saboteurs. 2 years ago, the president asked for and got what was codenamed the Aurora Project. The project soared from $80 million in 1986. They now want $2.3 billion in 1987, and nobody knows what the Aurora Project is. This is $35 billion for long months of nuclear war of World War III, and then the preparation of World War IV with robots stalking radioactive battlegrounds, satellites orchestrating nuclear attacks, generals speeding along interstates in lead-lined trucks. Washington Post, March 21st, FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Agency, wants $20 million for fallout shelters. Those fallout shelters, the $20 million, are for 600 bomb shelters to be built for local officials in Washington. The project will cost $1.5 billion between 1988 and 1992, but they want $20 million to start the project and get ready to protect 600 specific shelters. Another article in the Science News, 1987, Volume 131, Biological Warfare Research Under Fire. The government is escalating, as you know, the biological weapons. An agreement came between the Biological Warfare Symposium scientists at the annual meeting of the American Association for the Advancement of Science, and they discussed the Army's Medical Research Institute of Infectious Disease at Fort Detrick, which again they refer as defensive biological weapons. The Department of Defense uses nearly 20 government labs, more than 100 universities, and private groups. And private groups such as Stanford University have $87 million right now into genetic weapons or genetic systems that could be biological warfare. So they're moving along with a great amount of funds for that. New York Times, March 21st, 1987, March 22nd, rather, new exercises set for Honduras, preparing 50,000 troops for Latin exercises that'll take place May 1987. Large warships from Fort Bragg, North Carolina, amphibious brigade of 5,000 Marines. And then another article along the same lines from the New York Times. U.S. plans to rehearse the war with Nicaragua. The code name is Solid Shield. The New York Times, Washington Post, March 22nd, Air Force plans to hide secret fighter. The stealth fighter requires billions of dollars, and this article says that they want to house and put weapons on the stealth bombers, and that would come to over $1 billion just to build places to put them, $1 billion for arming them and sheltering them. That has nothing to do with the multi-billions that go into the stealth, but they want to spend another billion just to put them somewhere after they're made, put them away. March 29, 1987, Washington Post, Navy petitions U.S. legislatures to approve aircraft carriers. Secretary Navy John Layman, as he leaves the department as Secretary of Navy, is asking, please, to let them have two more ships for $7 billion, $3.5 billion each. And he promised and did a breakdown that 44 of the 50 states would get some kind of business out of this if we would just let them have the money, $7 billion for two more ships. The states that were not included in getting gravy from these contracts are Alaska, Arkansas, Montana, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Wyoming, and all the other states would get all this loot and all this cash jingling if they would allow $7 billion for two ships. March 11, 1987, at Oakland Tribune, Caspar Weinberger calls for missile defense prepared for space flight, and he's saying that we have to be ready for combat beyond the Earth's atmosphere, that we have to use the civilian commercial boosters that are launching military payloads in an emergency, and he signed a directive February the 4th, just several weeks ago, and then he immediately classified it secret, and the censored version of the document tells how the Pentagon announced their wishes to turn the space programs that are civilian into war, be prepared for a fight in space. Previous internal directives on the subject have discussed the need for military to ensure U.S. access to space, to the satellites, communications, navigation, and so forth. Be prepared that it will be transferred for our fight. Another article, April 2, 1987, NATO generals plot suppression. The NATO generals, the title looks confusing, but the article says the latest war games cooked up by NATO military chiefs go further than ever down the road to nuclear annihilation. They had a testing from March 3rd to 17th in Europe, involved over 500,000 troops from NATO, and they played war games involving Navy and various governments and departments of governments, and there were two aspects of WINTEX, it was called, W-I-N-T-E-X, those games that were disturbing to peace movements. One is the way in which World War III was mapped out. The Soviet Union would create tension in the Middle East and Central America. This would divert attention where preparations were made for attack on Europe. NATO would not renounce their concept of a nuclear first strike in strategy, and the NATO chiefs have deliberately set up war games built around the concept of first strike and are drumming it into military, government, and civil service personnel in Western Europe. And this is stirring up a lot of anxiety about reducing weapons there, because the WINTEX project of 87 has to do with operating in Afghanistan, rehearsal landings in Scandinavia countries, and specializing in materials all over Western Europe and Britain in preparation for World War III. April the 4th, 1987, from the People's Daily World, portable death. Can you see a sign of relief? The Air Force plans to get $20 billion to guarantee a constant source of electrical power in case of protracted nuclear war. The plan calls for the deployment of 300 small nuclear reactors to be transported by air around the country and overseas when the nuclear war comes. We don't want to lose our power system. There will be airborne reactors. Westinghouse will get the contract. And they will follow around where the MX, the Trident missiles are, the stealth bombers, and while those are being made, we will have our own energy, our own source of energy, and this will be contracted, as I say, to Westinghouse. That will be $20 billion. Are you adding up the billions? And then March 24th, 1987, New York Times, experts testify again and again, U.S. is not ready for a war. They're not ready yet. Ronald Reagan has spent $1.5 trillion in weapons in the past 6 years, but we're still not ready for a war. And the idea is, where should the money go? Should it be put into the troops or into the missiles, high-cost weapons, or should the money be diverted to the Pacific region? And various people testified that there would be a casualty nightmare and a medical nightmare. So many would be killed, and we're not ready yet, that we should put more into the troops, because officially what this article in the New York Times is saying, we're not ready, and John Lehman is announcing when he will strike, and as an advisor on the outside, he can have more influence even than a Secretary of the Navy. He can help create the incidences which cause the war or lobby for weapons that will be used in the war. And then, of course, there was another long article besides the one on World War III and IV, and many of you saw that one, $35 billion for secret projects vanishes from public sight. This is a series done by the Philadelphia Inquirer on the black budget and the mysterious weapons that are kept secret. The military share alone has grown eightfold to $17 billion of the budget. The secret budget has grown eightfold, and it is a huge amount of money never accounted for, and they're making all kinds of weapons and planning the kind of attacks such as the Manhattan Project was with the atomic bomb during World War II, except there seems to be unlimited money. The Black Project doesn't worry about money. This article says people that work at the Lockheed Missile Space Company in Sunnyvale said, if you need the money, you've got it. You've got all you want. So those are about 17 reasons why it's important to investigate, why I think it's important to investigate that list of 36,000 Nazi war criminals, to see where they are in terms of defense industry, in terms of engineers, in terms of location with missiles and rockets, with hospitals, mental hospitals, schools where they're making these horrendous bombs and genetic alteration weapons for World War III and plans for World War IV. This involves a lot of people from Poland, Germany, Eastern Europe, who were on the side of Adolf Hitler, who were brought to this country, whose sole goal is to return the monarchy and the powers that be and wipe out the Soviet Union at any cost, and they'll build their own housing and shelters and their own portable energy, and all of it is going to war. Now, I want to just bring up one other subject that is consistent with the psychology of war, and these are the individual deaths, not the accumulated mass deaths of war. Many of you might have seen the articles that came out this past week. One is titled, Fifth British Scientist Dies Mysteriously. Another one from the LA Times, British Scientist Death, Suicide or Conspiracy. Imagine the word conspiracy, using conspiracy, when six people have died or disappeared under the most horrendous circumstances, and many of them work for the same company. I'm not going into the details of their death, but it reminds me of the book Alternative 3 by Leslie Watkins, and all of a sudden the accumulated death of people around a certain group is being considered as a possible conspiracy. I haven't seen that word in the establishment press in the United States, really. I mean, this is quite a milestone. Conspiracy, written by Tyler Marshall of the LA Times. LA Times also had an article this week by Michael Wines and Ronald Ostro titled, Deaths of U.S. Agents Tied to Embassy Leaks. Six Soviet citizens said executed since 1985 that are linked to our embassy, and that there's a growing alarm over the losses. It seems to appear that lights are going out in a certain way, that certain agents have been recruited in the embassy, and then they have died. Imagine thinking that these serial deaths have a connection. Again, you can keep reading these articles and we'll go over them, but this is quite a change of thinking. Now let's run to the Contragate deaths, and I don't want to do a whole evening of that. I want to do some more on accuracy in media. And I am collecting a whole series of them. It'll be more than just one broadcast. I mentioned Stephen Carr, who died in March of 85, and Adler Barry Seal, February the 20th, 1986. Key people with the Christic Institute suit, with the connection of narcotics traffic, intelligence community, National Security Council, and the Contra operations. David Aronow in Miami, February 1987, and Franz Pastella, another boat builder, boat enthusiast in Miami, just days apart, 9 days later in Miami, Pietro Alfano, a defendant in the New York pizza trial, was shot and survived February the 14th, 1987, and he, of course, links to the cocaine of Colombia, to these same cast of characters, the Contra characters and deposits in the Merrill Lynch and the E.F. Hutton brokerage houses very close to the White House. Those deaths I've cited before quickly, and someday I'll do the details again on them. And Cyrus Hashimi, rather, was killed in July 86 in London. George Perry, linked to the arms to Iran, was murdered in 1983. But then the most important connection to these people is not, these are what I call the arrangers that are being killed that have some part in the action, but the top dogs are dying so quickly and in such a cluster that we have to take a look at them, just like they're looking at the people in the Soviet Union that are dying associated with our agency, or the scientists in London, six of them now. And I mentioned Santos Trafficante, his importance to the whole history of our time since the Bay of Pigs and certainly before. Edward Lansdale, Trafficante, died in April, on April 19th, 1987, all linked with the CIA, Defense Department, and with the Contras. Edward Lansdale, February the 24th, 87. Michael Burke, whose biography I haven't really detailed with you for a long time, he died February the 13th, 1987, close to Michele Sindona, Gulf and Western, Madison Square Garden, and the Reagan entourage in Hollywood. And Burke's attorney at Gulf at Western is the law office of Simon Rifkin and Arthur Lyman. Lyman's now chief counsel for Senator Inouye's investigation of Contra-Iran affairs. And, of course, William Casey, for all purposes, is brain dead. But the fifth person of this entourage, of this planner group that connects going back certainly to the murder of John Kennedy, if not before, is Clint Murchison Jr., who died April the 1st, just a week ago. He was part and parcel of the Minutemen group. He was the founder of the Dallas Cowboys. He turned it over, or sold it, to Bum Bright, Bumbright is one of the three people at John Birch Society who used the name of Bernard Weissman on that ad, wanted for treason the day Kennedy was killed, worked with a bunch of Nazis, and used the name of the Jew. I want to do more on Murchison before I get to accuracy in media. And, of course, he connects up to those people. But I'll take a one-minute break now because Murchison, Clint Murchison Jr., is very, very important. And it's interesting that he dies. I know he's had this long, lingering disease. I don't think he was murdered. He's had a long disease. But in a two-week time, Traffic County, Lansdale, Burke, Casey, and Murchison out of commission when these really were the top, top dogs. So after this 1 minute, I'll continue more on Murchison and then do part four of Accuracy in Media.